This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
David Swanson joins me live in studio on this beautiful afternoon. He's an author, blogger, activist. His new book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. David served as press secretary for Denis Kucinich's 2004 presidential campaign. So I guess you are Charlottesville's most famous liberal. Is that the way to say it?
I doubt that very much, but I would certainly say I'm a liberal from Charlottesville.
There you go. Give us a David Swanson 101. Where are you from? And I mean, how'd you end up here?
I went to grad school here. I did a master's in philosophy at UVA, having never finished a bachelor's in anything. And I worked for newspapers as a reporter. And, you know, I couldn't write exactly what I wanted. I had to walk the line. And so I became a PR person for groups I did support 100%, including a group called Acorn that's gotten a lot of questionable press in recent years. Since I've been gone. And not that I could have stopped it. But then I worked for Congressman Kucinich. I've worked for the AFL-CIO, for the labor movement. In recent years, I've been a blogger and an activist for peace and justice groups.
Yeah. And one of your websites was Beyond Downing Street? Right?
AfterDowningStreet.org. If you go to AfterDowningStreet.org, you'll find a huge coalition of groups and all kinds of information on how to expose lies and abuses of power and new information to prove them and how to get some accountability and some representation in our government.
Right. So the new book, Daybreak, what is this about?
This is sort of taking a step back from activism to think about what is not perhaps working ideally in Washington and what might we do about it? And there is a large focus on the incredible acceleration in the shift of power to the White House over the past 8 years. This was not new, but it was dramatically accelerated, and how Congress went along with that, and the courts, and the rest of us, and what can be done not just to undo that, but to move us in a direction. You know, it's 222 years this week since the Constitution was signed, and we've barely tweaked it. It's not cutting edge anymore. How can we move forward, and how can we be better organized and more strategic as citizens who are active in our republic?
I'm always so moved by the Jefferson, and of course he waned a bit in this view as he got older, but he had this view throughout most of his life and communicated it so eloquently that the Constitution is just this thing. It's the best we could come up with at the time, and for God's sakes, don't treat it like the Ark of the Covenant. We're not superhuman. In the future, you're going to know a lot more. Things will change. And please feel free to rip this up and redo it every 19 years if you want to.
We were supposed to amend it frequently. We've barely touched it. We were supposed to use the primary power given to the primary branch of the government in it frequently, namely impeachment. We have not done that much. Jefferson said we might as well wear the clothes of our grandfathers as treat this as a sacred document. This is a working document. They designed it to be amended. Now, we need lots of reforms that can be accomplished simply by enforcing the laws we've got, by passing new rules and laws and undoing bad ones. But ideally, we want the future we should have. We're going to have to get around to amending the Constitution.
We're talking with David Swanson. His new book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. We'll be giving away a free copy at the end of the interview, so stay tuned. So you spoke about how so much of the power that in the Constitution, which goes to the Congress, has shifted to the White House in recent years. Flesh that out for us. What exactly do you think has happened, and can we fix it?
The first branch in Article 1 of the Constitution is the Congress. 60% of the text of the Constitution, at least 80-90% of the power in the Constitution, depending on how you parse that, given to the Congress. Congress was to make the laws, raise and spend the money, raise and oversee the army, ratify treaties and appointments, and all of these powers have moved to the White House. So we now have established that a president can make laws with signing statements, can make laws with executive orders, can make laws with secret memos. And this could have been treated as an aberration. We could have had a new president and a new Congress this year say, that was a freak incident. We're going back to the old way. We're undoing this. Instead, we're cementing in place these new standards and these new behaviors.
So you're not seeing the Obama administration correct some of these things that you believe the Bush administration did that were so wrong, and part of this creating this imperial presidency that you write about?
Very few steps in the right direction, almost negligible, and some steps in the wrong direction, outdoing the claims of Bush and Cheney to powers of secrecy and so forth. But on newly established abuses, say signing statements, for example, Obama could have come in and said, we are not going to enforce any laws created by these hundreds of signing statements. Instead, he said, well, we're going to take up each one on a case-by-case basis in secret, presumably, and decide whether I like it or not. And he's begun writing his own. He's written a half dozen major signing statements, altering laws as he signs them into law. This was a new behavior with Bush. It could have been thrown out now. Instead, it's being firmly cemented in place. And you can argue, well, Obama hasn't done as many of them or as egregious ones as Bush. Well, of course not. But every future president is going to have that power unless we undo it.
Yeah. David, for those who don't know, what is a signing statement and what's wrong about it?
Well, our neighbor here, Monroe, I think, wrote the first one, and they tended to be statements expressing views and opinions when a president signed a bill, and that was not a problem. And they tended to be that way even through President Reagan and Clinton, who used an incredible number of them, and some of the theories that Dick Cheney's lawyer developed for them came out of the Reagan presidency. But what was new was that President Bush would sign a bill into law, which is one of his choices. The other is to veto it. And then he would write a note effectively saying, here are the sections of the bill that I will violate. And the Office of Accountability in Congress did a study, took a sample, a couple of times did this, and it increased and found that in a huge percentage of cases, the government was in fact obeying the stipulations of the signing statement. These things are beginning to be cited in Supreme Court rulings. They are becoming part of how our government functions. Whereas, in fact, a president is supposed to sign a bill and see that it is faithfully executed as passed by Congress, or veto it. Those are his two choices. And if he thinks part of a bill is unconstitutional, he can talk about that. He can talk about it before it comes to his desk. He can veto it. He cannot say, I won't enforce this part of this law.
That is, by definition, unconstitutional.
Yes, nothing more blatantly so.
But we haven't seen Congress, the courts, or the Obama administration challenge that. They've just accepted it as this is the way we do business now.
Well, we've seen show trials, right? We've seen, you know, the very first hearing that the House Judiciary Committee held in January 07, when they now had the majority for the Democrats, was on the signing statements. And they brought in Justice Department officials and they laid it all out, blatant crimes and abuses, and everybody went home and had dinner. That was that. And they did this with dozens of hearings through the course of the past 2 years. We saw this year, when Obama began issuing signing statements, a statement from the House of Representatives with no teeth to it, but a statement of opposition, universally signed onto by the Republicans and the Democrats. Because, of course, the Republicans will oppose something if a Democrat does it in the White House. The Democrats will oppose it, maybe, as long as it's also, again, a Democrat in the White House. But they have not put forth legislation to defund any measures authorized solely by signing statements, as they should do.
Yeah. We're talking with David Swanson. His new book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. What else do you identify that you write about in your book is blatantly unconstitutional and you think is taking the country in the wrong direction? And again, we're seeing both parties participate in this effort.
Yeah, I mean, take these banker bailouts opposed by 95% of us and done in the same way by both parties. Take the Federal Reserve, which is no more federal than Federal Express. This is not how we were supposed to manage our money. Take the treaty that President Bush and our president in Iraq, Maliki, made at the end of Bush's term. Joe Biden, as a senator, put forth a bill that said we won't fund the occupation of Iraq unless this treaty comes to the Senate for ratification as required by the Constitution. Senator Obama made similar noises, and he gradually mellowed and mellowed to the point where now they treat this treaty as the legal cover for continuing the illegal occupation of Iraq, and yet they're openly going to violate it. The top generals are saying, yeah, we're still going to be there after the end of 2011. And so you have a situation where the Senate has lost the power to ratify treaties, and not just a treaty, but a treaty for 3 years of war. This is the power to make war built into this treaty. And there's another one. The power to make war has become the president's power. I mean, these secret memos didn't just authorize torture. One of these secret memos said, this is by Jay Bybee, who's now got a lifetime appointment on the Ninth Circuit, said any president from here on out at his whim can launch an aggressive war. I mean, this is all down in writing, and it's not being undone. It's being cemented in place.
Yeah, and it's scary stuff, because this is happening right now in America. We are watching our government create a king. I mean, that's basically what's happening. We have watched a king come about. This is a kingship.
Yes, yes. You maybe know? A queen someday. It's a king right now. An elected despot is what Thomas Jefferson feared. And it is, of course, war, as Madison warned us, that is the wet nurse of executive aggrandizement. And we have aggrandized to the point of a monarchy. We really have a monarchy. And we have the attitudes of a monarchy. And we have Congress members complaining that the president won't write the health care bill for them, that the president won't order them to do better. Even though he's as corrupt as the rest of them, he's not moving healthcare in any direction that the majority of Americans want, but they want the president to tell them what to do, and they want to be a court of advisors. They don't want to be they will not only not impeach, they will not enforce subpoenas. You know, I know the Capitol Police has got plenty of jail cells. I've been in them. But the Congress will not enforce its own subpoenas. Dozens of subpoenas from the past 2 years in Congress, not reissued. The ones for Rove and Myers, you have the Rove's buddy, the White House counsel, negotiating partial compliance on behalf of a common criminal with the first branch of our government. And you have Senator Leahy, when these torture memos come out, say to Judge Bybee, would it be too much trouble? Would you mind coming in and talking to the Senate? And Senator Bybee saying, if I can say this, go to hell. And Senator Leahy saying, oh, okay. They will not use the Capitol Police to enforce subpoenas. They therefore have no power.
Congress.
Yeah. Congress. They ask the Justice Department to enforce subpoenas against
Total fear? I mean, is it fear that they're going to lose their job, so their fear of taking any responsibility and showing any leadership unless it's totally, totally safe?
It's above all loyalty to party rather than branch of government, so that at any given moment, half of Congress's loyalty is to the president because he's the leader of their party. Beyond that, it's fear of the corporate media. It's fear of campaign donors. It's fear of stepping out in front of one's party's leaders in the Congress. And those leaders are corrupted in a great many ways.
Yeah. My guest live in studio is David Swanson. And the phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you've got a question. His new book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. You mentioned subpoena power and conviction. Do you think anybody needs to be convicted or will be convicted for these things, violating the Constitution that you speak of?
Well, we now have this investigation into whether to have a full investigation into whether to prosecute certain bad apple torturers, right, with a declaration of immunity for the higher-ups, the paper pushers who created the policy and ordered the torture done, right? This is to openly establish two classes of citizens, those under the law and those above the law. If that prosecution goes forward, and their intention is that it
which
not.
Which is very much like feudalism. I mean, we were talking about creating a monarchy. That was feudalism. There were folks, as long as you were close enough to the king and you were part of that group, you could pretty much do what you want.
The major step that started to remove feudalism was the Magna Carta, which we are tossing out now because we established over the past 8 years preventive detention, no habeas corpus, and we are now formalizing a system that lacks habeas corpus so that we will have this pretense of due process. So we are fixing in place in a way that Bush and Cheney alone could not. We are doing that now, the current Congress and the current administration. If the prosecution goes forward as outlined, and they hope it won't go forward at all, I think it will. If it only goes that far, it will be worse than nothing because it will establish that a president can say to his lawyer, write me a secret memo making this crime legal. Our duty as citizens, through the media, through education, through advocacy against the Justice Department, and through our representatives in Congress, is to open up that prosecution much more broadly. And we've got civil suits moving it forward. We've got suits from other nations like Spain moving it forward. We've got state and local angles. But we have to be working primarily through our so-called representatives in Congress.
What would you like to see done, number one, ideally, from where you sit? And number two, what's your response to all the people who say, I don't have any problem with torture? Is it, as long as it saved lives, and President Bush told me it saved lives, that's good enough for me.
Well, the book's 350 pages. There's a lot of things I would like to see done. I can't give you one thing. But to respond to that torture argument, the vice president, the former vice president, argued vehemently months back that there were two secret memos that would prove that torture worked. We now have those memos. They show nothing of the sort. And those claims have gone away. That being said, even if it did work, it was still illegal. And if you want to legalize it, legalize it. But to simply violate the law allows the government then to go forward violating all other laws, including the ones you like. That is not the way to behave. But in fact, it is well documented that not only does it not work, it endangers Americans. It enrages people around the world against America. It has all sorts of negative consequences, including brutalizing those who take part in it, who then have to live it with us in our society. There is no upside to it. There is no conceivable instance. And I went through this in the philosophy department at UVA as a student there, where you could have a ticking time bomb that would justify it. It's absolute fantasy that could never happen in the real world. On top of which, it is illegal. It is a felony. And when I break a law, I'm punished. When you break a law, you're punished. When the vice president goes on television and confesses to felonies, we have to act.
We're talking with David Swanson. The new book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. You can check him out online at davidswanson.org. What gives you hope? I'm curious, what gives you hope? When you look at the news and you follow the news closer than most of us, what do you see going on right now in America that really truly gives you hope that some of these problems might be fixed and that it's not going to get worse, which is my great fear?
Well, I don't act when I'm hopeful. I don't act when I see a light at the end of the tunnel. I act most strongly and work hardest when things look gloomiest. And so I don't share the attitude most people have where they need to be encouraged and hopeful. But I am increasingly hopeful because of people's disappointment over the past 8 months when they put all kinds of excited expectations into an election of a president and then were, of course, predictably disappointed. I don't think they voted for the wrong guy. I voted for him. I think they expected way too much, and their disappointment is encouraging if it's turned in the right direction, if it's turned to independent advocacy for peace and justice and what we want of our representatives, regardless of party. And we are winning victories that are not on television. We have prevented an attack on Iran thus far by exposing the lies about Iraq. We have countered recruitment in the military. This past weekend, the Army announced as a result of protests, it will shut down these shopping mall game centers to make killing look like fun for kids, supposedly because it's got enough recruits. Absolute nonsense. They're pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into trying to get more recruits because of the protests. They won't announce our victories for us. We have to do it, and there are lots of them, and we are a lot more active than we know, but yeah. It's not enough.
David, what do you say to the folks, the conservatives in our country who are crying fascism against the Obama administration, just like liberals cried fascism against the Bush administration? But they're pointing to health care. They're pointing to, you know, speaking to school kids as examples of this fascism. What's your response to that?
I think the entanglement of our government with the banks on Wall Street, with the Federal Reserve, is a fascist direction. I think our deployment of the U.S. military in this country, border patrol and spying and police missions, is a step in the direction of fascism. I think the worship of the president by a large majority of the public at any given instant, whichever type of president it is a move in the direction of fascism. I think they are absolutely right to oppose the banker bailouts. I think they are absolutely right to oppose the gerrymandering and the corruption of money that give incumbents lifetime seats in Congress. I think they are dangerously wrong to take that anger and direct it against gay people and black people and immigrants. And I think their pronouncements about Obama are crazy. A lot of times what they accuse Obama of is what I wish he would do. right? I wish we would join the civilized world and create a single-payer healthcare system. It would be much simpler, much less expensive, much more efficient, and we would treat healthcare as a human right. It ought to be a right in a, in an updated constitution. That's not what Obama wants to do. Obama's taken more than 10 times the money from the unhealth industry than any Congress member or senator. He is not what they fear, and in some cases what I wish he were. But he does love power, and he was given far more power than perhaps anyone in the history of the world, and he's not giving it back.
The book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union, author David Swanson. You can check him out online at davidswanson.org. David, thank you for being here. Congratulations on the book.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.